Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley, episode 563, recorded Wednesday, March 28th, 2018. Hello, God. It's me, Paul. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully, so you can be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/windows. And by WordPress. Reach more customers when you build your business website on wordpress.com. Plans start at just $4 a month, and you'll get 15% off any new plan at wordpress.com/windows. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show where we cover the latest news from Microsoft. Hello, Paul Thurrott from Thurrott.com. Boston guy transplanted to Lower Macungie Valley. Hello, Mary Jo Foley. Once a Manhattanite, never leaving the island.
Never.
These two make up two of the best, the best Microsoft journalists in the business. Mary Jo Foley reports for ZDNet at allaboutmicrosoft.com. Paul Thurrott does whatever it is he does at Thurrott.com. Thurrott.com. And each week, every Wednesday, except for when Microsoft Build's going on, we're going to do that one on Monday. We'll explain that later. That's not till June. We get together. We talk about the latest news from Microsoft. I got really confused. I was so embarrassed on the radio show. Mm-hmm. A guy calls up, says, "Well, I have 1728 on one machine and 1721 on the other machine." And I think it's it says RS4. And I said, "Oh, you got Redstone."
Oh, I see.
I'm trying to explain in real time without a cheat sheet.
Right.
What the hell's going on? He says, "Well, which version should I have?" And I said, "You should get off the Insider program and be normal."
If you're asking that question.
Yes.
Yep.
Should I have 17?
Because honestly, I should have known immediately when you said those numbers what you meant, and I was confused.
Yeah.
You know, 17,
yeah.
What?
Yeah. And yeah. I still don't know what 1803 is called.
None of us know.
Is it? Then I got all confused because of skip ahead, and I thought if for a while he was on Redstone 5. It was very confusing.
Right.
It was nightmarish.
Right.
But I tried. I think at the end, I finally explained to him, well, Microsoft does A/B testing. Some people get different. You might have different versions of betas on different machines. Is that right?
You might have different features sometimes, like sets.
But not different
some
numbers.
Some people got it.
So this is. I don't want to get too far afield here, but if it's 17.2 something, it's RS5.
Yeah,
Mary Jo said, they have done A/B testing on individual features, and then for whatever it's worth, I don't know. I can't explain this, but when the latest build came out. I'm sorry, before the latest build, there was one build before this. I had updated a couple machines, and the ARM machine did not get that build.
Yeah.
But now that the latest build is out, it did get this build. So it skipped one build. I can't quite explain that, but it might just have been something ARM specific.
And it's possible. Yeah, you just didn't get the, you know, one machine didn't get updated yet, but they'll be the same.
Yeah.
But skip ahead really threw me. That was where I...
Well, listen, you think it's bad
it
just
throws
to
us.
Imagine if you were Microsoft and had to support this stuff.
I know.
Gosh, you know, I can't even imagine the matrix that they must have to keep track of. That's why they're doing quantum computing. It's the only way they can figure it out.
And by the way, the first thing I said, well, it's really, you know, I commend Microsoft because mass beta testing is really the best way to figure out if an operating system, you know, has bugs or not. Although I have some questions about how, to me, this might merely be a marketing effort because, well, sometimes they have mass testing and still bugs come out. Like when the Kindle crashed the computer and all people's cameras broke, it's like, well, are you telling me that none of the Windows Insiders had cameras?
Sometime last year, I think it was last year. Maybe it had to do with Surface. I don't remember anymore. But I had sort of brought up the notion that Microsoft needed a reliability initiative, kind of like they had that security initiative.
Trustworthy computing.
A long time ago. And I still wonder about that stuff because, Netscape kind of was like this back in the 90s. Google obviously is like this. Apple's run into trouble like this.
If you're testing with more than a million people, which I figure there's got to be more than a million people on the Insider program, right?
Yeah, there are several millions. Yeah.
Wouldn't you find a problem like most of the cameras not working? Wouldn't you know that?
Okay, so I didn't intend to talk about this, but I will. I just want to point out that I sort of raised this issue recently when I talked about things like telemetry data and how Microsoft relies on.
Are you paying attention?
Systems.
Yeah.
Well, no. I think the way I put it was, data is important, but how you use the data is more important. And I actually feel there's a giant disconnect.
Yes.
At Microsoft between what they're being told, what they're listening to, and I think there's kind of a bias towards wanting to hear feedback that confirms what they already believe.
Ah.
You know, I just see too much of that kind of stuff. Mm. It's a hard topic. But that's a great example of it.
Yeah.
And so they always fight the last battle like we always do, you know. They fix the issue. No Kindle will ever bring down Windows 10 again. So you can
rest assured of that.
Yes, we have solved that problem.
The Kindle one I kind of understand because it's not, I mean, but the cameras, it was like most of the cameras, even Microsoft's own cameras broke.
Sure.
So anyway, that's last year. Here we are.
It's an ongoing problem.
It is an ongoing issue. I kind of ended up the whole discussion after I told him get off the Insider program and get normal, which you'll be able to do as soon as you get this, whatever it is, 1803.
Yep. That's my tip. Don't ruin it.
And then I said, but I really have to wonder if how much of this is mere marketing, that Microsoft understands that there's fanatics, there's enthusiasts who want to have the latest, greatest, and they want to be the ones that say, hey, I got the latest. Yeah. And
remember, I'm sorry.
Well, I just wonder how much they're paying attention.
So do I. That's the, Is anybody out there? Hello, God, it's me, Paul. I mean, I wonder the same exact thing. And then, this is
I've been
the
listening to you too long, obviously.
That's the problem. They can fix things, right? And so we used to be on a system where there was a patch Tuesday every month, right?
Yeah.
They can arbitrarily fix bugs and reboot your computer any day of the week now. So, I'm sure there's, high quality folks that think they're shipping high quality software and their aim is to never have to do that. But the reality, and you go just look it up, is they do it all the time.
Yeah. Bugs happen. What are you going to do? That's life in the big city.
Yeah. Well, what you could do was develop a system that makes higher quality software.
Yeah.
You are a software maker.
That's a surprisingly challenging thing to do, especially when you have hundreds of millions of lines of code.
And they have so many different combinations and permutations of things they'd have to test it on, right? Yeah. Like,
that's right.
I am using, whatever, HP, blah, blah, blah. But I might have something installed that somebody else doesn't have installed.
I buy that. I said this about Microsoft versus Apple 20 years ago. You know, the fact that Windows PCs boot up every day and people get work done all around the world is a miracle, given all the configurations and all that kind of stuff. But why isn't the system architected better? Why could plugging in a Kindle bring down a computer? You know, do I have to worry every time I pick up a USB memory stick that if I put this thing in my computer, a bomb's going to go off or, the roof's going to collapse or whatever. I mean, like it shouldn't be this fragile.
Yeah.
But it is.
By the way, I just got my meltdown patch on the Dell Optiplex, this ancient desktop I had today. Well, and it was like, do you want to have your firmware reboot your system now? And this is right before Windows Weekly. I'm like,
but you did it.
I assume that you enjoyed what I take to be a text-based screen where little squares go across and it's writing blocks and stuff.
I was like,
we're back to DOS days.
How many bits free did you have in Commodore Basic while you were in that mode? Did you notice?
And it took a while too. I was sitting here like, okay, this is probably a dumb idea that I did this, but here we are.
No. Because Leo's always late, so you had plenty of time. So here we are. The vernal equinox has passed us.
Yes.
Leo, you are a master of time and space. Again, I can't believe how much of this stuff you understand.
As E. E. Cummings might have said, spring has sprung.
Yeah. Oh, so, well, you should come over to here, this part of the country, Leo, because I can tell you the spring has sprung a hole and it's leaking all over winter.
Oh, Lord.
Do you still have snow?
We still have some snow on the ground, although it was raining overnight, so it's going to
wash away. It'll wash away.
Wow.
Spring when the world is mud, as E.E. Cummings said.
Yes.
Luscious, the little lame balloon man whistles far and wee.
Oh, I remember that poem.
Yeah. So now that the little balloon man is whistling.
Man from Nantucket. Wait, what are we doing?
And now that the little balloon man is whistling far and wee, do we have an update? Are we ready to muggleize?
Yeah, we think we are.
We're getting there. We think so.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's that.
Microsoft won't say so far that this is.
They have not said, but this is clearly.
And it's,
if it's not this, it's going to be a point something of this. You know, this is, I think it.
And Mary Jo, you say you think this is actually going to be called the Spring Creators Update, really?
You know, they still haven't given us a name. That name's leaked out in a few different places over time. And at this point, if they don't have another name.
What's the difference?
It's getting late.
Redstone 4 works. Spring Creators Update.
I
kind of
like Redstone 4. I really do. 1803
is perfect. I don't know why they can't just do that.
Sounds right. Yeah.
So there have been places that have been called that.
It has.
Yeah. Now that's not going to be confusing because we had a Spring Creators Update last year. That's not gonna be.
Well, that was actually just called the Creators Update.
Oh, that was the original Creators Update, and then there was the fall. Oh well, this that would make sense.
They're going to get into overloading. What do we call this fall? They keep doing it.
Overloading starts this fall. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, by the way, like I said, Xbox does the same thing. It's spring update, you know, fall update, some November update, sometimes whatever. They've never put a year on
it.
So
in a way, that's kind of reassuring. It's just, you know, like the seasons.
Except sometimes there's the old spring update and the new spring update also both in support at the same time.
Yeah. Right. That's true. I guess, you know, again, this is just semantics. I mean, it kind of doesn't matter, but
call
it bothers me when people refer to Windows 10 version anything as anything something something update, because the update is the thing that brings it to that version. I don't think Windows 10.
Oh, now that is really picky. That is really.
That's why I said it was semantics, but I, you know, but
it's not the version you're getting.
Leo,
the update.
Listen to me. Okay. Leo, this is important. It's not an update. It's a release.
It's a semi-annual channel.
Listen,
just to be precise.
It's a SAC. You got to give me this.
I'm sorry, SAC.
SAC.
It's a SAC.
Semi-annual channel.
Semi-annual channel. SAC. Anyway, when?
It's going to start rolling out in April, mainstream.
I believe it's the end of March right now.
Yes,
we
should
saw
be very
some rumors
soon.
About this, didn't we? I think people were talking about Patch Tuesday, which is
the first Patch Tuesday. The 10th, is that right? April 10th or somewhere around there? Because they tend to start rolling them out on Patch Tuesdays. So,
that's interesting. So the first, Tuesday actually is the 3rd of April. So it could be as soon as
the second Tuesday is traditionally.
Second Tuesday. Okay. So it'd be the 10th.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
That's a guess when it may start rolling.
That makes sense.
I don't remember. Someone was talking about this on Twitter, but I don't.
I know. I saw that too. Maybe it was Zach at Windows Central. Zach Bowden, maybe. No. Somebody was.
What are we? So you're using, in all likelihood, Paul, you're using the RTM or something off.
I better be. I just switched every one of my computers over to this thing.
So you have confidence. This is the final.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, if it isn't literally the final, and there are always these updates that occur between whenever they finalize it, whenever they release it to the public. So there's going to be cumulative updates. They could rev this thing. There could be another build to the Windows Insider program. That's this build number point, you know, 2 or 3 or something. I mean, this is clearly it. As clear as it can be, given the mud that we're given.
We're done.
Yeah.
So, anything new? I mean, are we kind of these? They must have frozen features months ago.
Yeah, we were just reviewing the features because, you know what, you kind of forget because we get all caught up in like, this build has this little thing and this build has that. But if somebody says to you, what is in Redstone 4? What am I going to get when I get Redstone 4? And then you have to go back and go, okay, what are you going to get in Redstone 4? Well, I mean, timeline is the obvious, right?
it's well, that's the big one. But honestly, I don't think a lot of people are going to even notice Timeline.
You know, I know, it's kind of because the apps aren't ready for it, right? So,
well, you know, that's interesting. So let me see if I what I get on this computer, because it's this is different. But I was looking at this on my other computer, and yeah, so on this computer, it actually shows Markdown. Markdown Pad 2, which is the, you know, the text editor that I use. There's no way that app supports this feature natively. It isn't supported, the app itself, that is. It shows websites. I'm using Edge right now, so I don't know what that means exactly. I don't see any Chrome stuff in here. Yeah, so, yeah, it's unclear. Maybe if it's document-based, it just happens. I'm just guessing there, because I can't explain why Markdown Pad would be in there.
Yeah.
But like I said, I don't see any Chrome activity.
I don't think Chrome is supposed to be in there at all, right?
I don't see it. No. So that would that kind of make. I only have a few days of data, unfortunately.
Yeah.
On this computer.
Yeah. So Sets didn't make it in. Sets is a Redstone 5 thing, but Timeline is. So it would have been better if you had Timeline and Sets together, because then I think that would have made it work more like what people are thinking it's going to be like.
Exactly, because you could go back to a point in time and say, open this thing in a set.
Right.
You know, and it could be all of those application windows at that point in time in its own, you know, kind of single window with tabs.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's not going to be there yet. So it's like Timeline's there, no Sets. But another one that is there, because we've been covering it, and especially Paul has, PWA is there. PWA support. In fact, today we saw a partial list of the sessions that are going to be at Build, and PWA is listed as one of them. So thank goodness they're going to talk about that. I know. Yeah.
No, seriously, they haven't advertised anything like that.
I know.
Ever, if I'm not mistaken. I mean, I know. Yeah, so that's good.
So how does that appear? Do you go to the store and then can you tell what's happening even? I mean,
No. I mean,
if they didn't tell you, you wouldn't know.
That's right. And that's the point, right? And you could go back to Windows. You could go back to Windows 8, and the application platform at that time supported development using various languages and various frameworks and so forth. And one of them was JavaScript. And so I think the early, you know, mail calendar apps and so forth were Windows Live productions. They were done in JavaScript, HTML, and CSS. And if you weren't told that, I don't think anyone would look at that app and say, this is a web app. You know, like I don't think anyone would ever know that. And so, yeah, the goal with PWA is that there should just be more apps in the store, and hopefully, and for some people, they might be familiar, right? Because some of the famous ones that we see out in the world will probably appear in the store. And if you use them on Android or whatever, you say, I know this app. Yeah. Like this is what I want to see on Windows as well.
Like Twitter is an example, right? Twitter's going to be PWA app in the store, supported in Redstone 4. So.
That's right.
Yeah, it's interesting though. Like the way you will know it works is if people don't know that they're using a PWA. Right, basically.
If you wanted to investigate, you could probably look on the disk and see manifests and stuff, right? There'd be some sort of
you could try to discover why a 245 byte PWA has turned into a 10 megabyte UWP. You know, because of all the unbelievable, you know, cladding that they have to throw around it. And then there are the really technical people. Like I just, two people on Twitter is kind of classic right before the show were complaining. Well, I was complaining about this, you know, please review my app pop-up that appears in the Twitter app now. And it's like, oh, it's a great first impression of PWAs. It's like, what are you talking about? Right. It's like, this has nothing to do with PWAs. This is the store popping this thing up. It's a store process. But more to the point, nobody's having first impressions of PWAs.
There's no impression at all.
It's an impression of an app.
The app started as a web page. So you, or do you go to the store?
You go to the store.
Okay.
Yeah. In RS4, discoverability only happens through, and actually I should say installation only happens through the store. Microsoft has talked about their desire to have these PWAs pop up in search results. If you went to search and said, I want a Twitter app, you know, at the top it's, hey, you're running Windows 10. You should, you know, click here to install the Twitter app.
Right.
But that's not happening in RS4. So that's something for the future. That's how it works in Android, right? You just come across a website that is a PWA and it advertises itself either very explicitly with a banner at the bottom, or you can just go through the, you know, the menu, add to, I think it says add to home screen or whatever the text is.
Okay. I mean, in theory, you could also get it eventually. You'd be able to get it in a web browser, right? You'd browse to it.
That's the plan.
Yeah.
That's the plan.
But so for right now, all right. And will it say in the store, like, you know, have some special mark that says PWA?
It has the, it is a 666 right under the about box.
the mark of the beast.
Yeah, it's, on it right its there. Name is okay. Legion. Okay. Its version number is Legion. No, I don't believe they're going to call it out in any way.
Just like right now, you don't know something's a hosted web app in the store, right? I mean, there's nothing that says, this is a hosted web app, right? It's UWP. Right,
exactly. They don't, people don't think like this. Nobody, you know, we didn't call out the fact that it was a C++ app before either. So most people just don't care about that kind of thing.
No.
People just don't understand.
For sure.
Once they do. Are we in S mode yet? Smode? Are we smodified?
So that should be something that arrives around the time of Redstone 4, that there'll be S mode for Windows Home, Windows Pro, and Enterprise. Those should all be ready to go.
So this is something I'm very curious about. There's two ways that this is going to pop up. One is going to be on new PCs. And we know there'll be Windows 10 Home and Pro systems that will be shipping in S mode sometime in the next 3 to 6 months or whatever. And probably it intensifies over time. But Microsoft releases ISOs for people to download of Windows 10 so they can install the system cleanly or whatever. And the version that they have today for 17.09 does include Windows 10S. And I'm expecting that the version they'll release for RS4 will include both Windows 10 Home and Pro in S mode as choices. So that you know, because that's what you would want if you it might be what you want. If you got a computer that came in S mode and you liked S mode, that's what you wanted, and you were going to blow away the system and use Microsoft's web-based tools to do it. It's that should be an option, and it was for the last one, so I think it will be for the next one too.
And switching will be free for everyone. Microsoft did confirm that. So if you use S mode in any of the versions of Windows, you'll be able to move off of it for free and not pay that $49 that you were going to have to pay.
Does this impact our beautiful little HP Envy X2s in any way?
Yeah, a little bit. So I have a little bit in the notes about that machine, and I'd like to touch on that.
We'll get to that
then, if that's okay. It's a big part of the story, because Windows 10 on ARM is an interesting. It's not right to call it a subset or a superset, but it's something over the side of S mode, because even when you're not in S mode, you're kind of still in S mode, you know, in some way. It's interesting. Yeah. It's a different thing again, which is great because this isn't complex enough already.
Isn't it S mode or not? It's not considered S mode.
What I mean, okay, so I wanted to hold this.
Save it. WDAG in Fresno.
We don't know a lot about the enterprise features and or the security features yet in Redstone 4. Like, we've had little hints about some of them, but we haven't had a whole giant blog post of things like, here's all the stuff you're going to get if you're a business customer. Figure they're going to do that at some point. But one of the things they did talk about is Windows Defender Application Guard going to Pro and not just being limited to Enterprise. So that's a really big deal, because WDAG uses Hyper-V to isolate potential malware and exploits. So it kind of like containerizes something that could be malicious. And this is a feature that, frankly, would be good for everyone, but at least now it's going to be in Pro as of Redstone 4.
Okay.
But otherwise, I was trying to think of like other enterprise-y things. Like, we've had little bits and pieces of kind of tweaks they're making, but is there any other big enterprise feature that we've heard about for Redstone 4? I don't think so.
I got to be honest. I don't think there are any truly big features in this except for our timeline. And because that's not really going to impact that many people, you could kind of make the argument it's not itself a big feature. So in some ways, this release does satisfy your call for an R2 release, right? Because it obviously there are tons of little improvements, and I'm sure, and I'll do this because I'll be updating the book like an idiot as I go through it. I'll notice 100 tiny little changes. But as far as big stuff, I don't know that there is any. I would say that the Fluent design changes are going to be the most noticeable to most people. Because it's especially true if you use the built-in applications. I know you won't see it, but you know, in things like Microsoft Edge or a bunch of the other built-in apps, Mail-in Calendar actually too. You know, there's a lot more translucency effect going on. I like it. I mean, I sort of understand the need for A, for this to get everywhere else in the system, and B, for there to be choices, right? Because right now we have that one style. It's called acrylic. I think it looks good, but I think there's room in there for 3 to 5 or whatever number of other, not themes, but whatever, you know, whatever you want. I don't know what to call it. It's like a filter almost. Different styles of some kind. But, it's kind of lipstick on the pig in a way. But I think it's attractive, not the pig thing, the acrylic stuff in Windows. You know, it's like, it just gives it a nice, it's... I don't know, people miss Aeroglass. It's kind of a little bit like that, except nicer and
it's
more
like
modern.
when you move your cursor on a menu, it makes it a little lighter, so you
it
can
kind
see
of
where
ripples
your cursor
as you go
is.
And it, yeah, things like the stuff under the cursor responds
right
to the cursor going over it, like a stone skipping across a pond. But it gives you a visual cue that something will happen if you select that thing that, you know, is animating. Yeah.
In fact, you know, I joke about how I can't see Fluent, and I think it's kind of like, who cares? They're making it prettier. But if you listen to Microsoft talk about Redstone 4 and in their developer sessions, the thing they always call out, like when they say, what's the biggest thing that developers should notice about Redstone 4? They always call out Fluent, always. They're like, this is the big thing. Like, this is going to be big, you know?
Mary Jo, the new version of Calculator is a game changer.
It, guys, once Notepad gets Fluent, I don't know if I'll be able to live.
I have bad news for you with regards to that. I think
they're not going
to
do it.
I don't think they're going to, because it's a desktop app, right? I mean,
know.
It's more likely that Notepad just deprecated.
Or they make Notepad UWP at some point, right?
And they'll call it Notepad 3D, and you'll be able to insert 3D emojis into your text.
Yeah, that'll be amazing.
Yay! Can't wait.
The little dinosaur over there in the corner doing like 3D punches at you while you're trying to write.
We are going to get better privacy settings, and that's a good
thing. Well,
yeah.
There's going to be some new privacy settings in Redstone 4.
Okay.
There's going to be the diagnostic data viewer. So it shows you the telemetry data that Windows 10 devices are sending to Microsoft. And then you have something that also lets you delete that. Data. You can't shut telemetry off. That's not part of Redstone 4. But at least you're, again, getting a little more granular, giving people at least the illusion of more control. So that'll be in this release when it comes out. And the other thing, which I feel like we talk about a lot on the show, lots of Windows Subsystem for Linux tweaks are in this.
Linux!
You know, nothing that's like, wow, unbelievable, but like lots of little niceties. I think we talked one time about sockets working across Windows and Unix and, you know, like lots of little things that people who want to use Linux on Windows would appreciate, especially people who are systems administrators.
Do we add something to, I don't see it, but is there something in the notes about the sideloading capabilities that they just announced?
No.
So actually, this is kind of a big deal. I read about it on my own site. It's pretty good. You should go there. It's called Throt.com. I don't know if you've ever heard of it.
Wait a minute. I have to interrupt. I've just been shown the Fluent Calculator. My God.
Right?
Game changer?
Leo. My God.
No, but make it full screen.
If they do this, I can only imagine what Notepad's going to be like.
Okay. What looks different, guys? Seriously, like, what's different about it?
It's Fluent.
You can see the background through the back.
See?
Okay, but...
See?
It's kind of hazy.
Okay. It's kind of like, it's a hazy
day
of summer.
It's like macular degeneration or something.
Yeah, like a little blurry.
Mother?
Okay.
Mother? Are you there, Mother? I can
see
you.
If you like shiny, blurry things, you're going to love Fluent.
Shiny, blurry things. This is RS4.
That could be their tagline. I'll let them use that.
Shiny, blurry things.
Shiny, blurry things.
That'll be your quote in the ad. It'll be like, if you like shiny, blurry things, this is for you.
You will love Redstone 4.
Mother? Is that you, Mother?
Were we talking about WSL or were you done? I can't remember.
Yeah, what's the side loading thing?
Yeah, so Microsoft announced today that they're going to allow individuals to sideload
what
their own Linux distributions into WSL.
What?
So in other words, if you like some obscure Linux distribution, Paul Linux or whatever, and you don't have to wait for it to be in the store, you can, as an individual, just sideload it yourself. And I think that answers the final big complaint, such as it is, for this thing, right?
No, I mean, not even close. will that, out of curiosity, require the cooperation of the distribution manufacturer?
Yeah, that's what I thought. I thought the distributors had to agree.
They have to make some sort of package. Because installer does that.
I got this information secondhand from a disreputable website, but my understanding
is that an individual clarification there.
I could be wrong.
Yeah, I think because I would think it would kind of be like, you know, when they were doing Android apps on Windows, it was like, yeah, you can just take any Android app and put it in the store, but not really, right?
Not without help, not without a bridge.
Hmm. I'm looking. Because I know Peter Bright.
See how they word it.
I'm looking for Peter Bright. I'm like, maybe Peter Bright will have the word.
I'm looking for another disreputable third-party website.
I know.
So
yeah.
I assume. I'm kidding. I love Peter, by the way.
Microsoft has an open-source tool for building your own Linux package.
Aha! So they have a tool. So you can do it yourself. That makes sense.
Yeah, you can.
I think But what would that include?
The tool is aimed at two groups, distribution owners, so they can produce a bundle for the store, and developers, so they can create custom distributions inside.
It takes the form of an awk script. And
so it's not something an end user. Well, if you're sophisticated enough to do that, I guess.
Well, if you're a system admin who relies on Linux and you're using some whatever, it doesn't matter what version it is, and that thing's not in the WSL. And that's what you want, and that's what it will take to get you to use Windows 10. I mean, that's pretty cool.
So it's safe to say, then, that the kernel emulation is pretty complete, that you can run anything you want on WSL if it's Linux compliant?
I feel like we didn't discuss this properly before, but
yes,
you know that
yes,
Windows is Linux now, right?
No, it's not.
You know, Satya loves Linux, so Windows is Linux. That's it. The tool is called WSL Distro Launcher. It's in GitHub.
Yeah, because what it's doing, I imagine, is stripping out the actual Linux so that you can use the Linux emulation layer. And then it copies. It's like taking the icing off of a cake and putting it on your Windows machine.
Cardboard.
Yeah. Yeah.
Look, it's a cake.
It's not. It looks like the cake.
It tastes a little bit like a cake.
If you like icing, it's all the icing. But none of the cake.
Okay.
That's not really fair because it's not the cake. It's more like a hamantaschen without the poppy seed filling.
Wow.
I can't. That's
that's very Easterish, isn't it? Passover, Easter.
Yeah, it's this time of year. It's hamantaschen
like
time of year.
Turkish bath, but it's dry. Okay.
Can you spell hamantaschen?
Closet is what you
say. Yeah, hamantaschen. Leslie makes the very
Linux.
Best. Hamantaschen Linux. Yep.
I'm sure there is one.
Yep. All right, let's take a little break because now I'm focused on hamantaschen and I would
like
one.
Snacks.
Let's get snacks. It's snack time. Everybody run and get a snack while Leo does his best impression of Fireman Brad. No, that's not true. I'm going to do a little ad, an advertisement. A word, as they used to say in the old radio shows from our sponsor, in this case, a mighty fine sponsor, the number one mortgage lender in the country. Okay, now we're talking. Quicken Loans is not only number one in your hearts, because they are, in fact, 8 years in a row, number one in customer satisfaction, according to J.D. Power, for mortgage origination, for the last 4 years in a row for mortgage servicing. So, that pretty much covers the waterfront when it comes to home loans. They're also number one in volume now. That just happened, and I want to take a little bit of credit for it, but really I should give all the credit to their newest mortgage approval tool, Rocket Mortgage. Rocket Mortgage takes what was a fairly antiquated process, putting on pants, going to the bank, asking the banker, please, sir, can I have a loan? loan? Well, fill this out in triplicate and we'll think about it. And you fill out the long form. You give it to the banker. Then they call you and they say, you need to fax us. Go to the facsimile machine and fax us pay stubs from the year 2012. Which means you're on a mission to get pay stubs from 6 years ago. And, well, this can go on and on and on. Last time we bought a house, which admittedly was in 2014. Actually, 2013. Lisa and I did get it from a big bank and did all of that and did fax them pay stubs. And we faxed them ad infinitum, ad nauseum, if you don't mind a little Latin thrown into your Quicken Loans ads. They took us, I think, this big bank, you know, the one with the whips and the horses, took us about 2 months to get a loan, which was kind of a problem because the seller was getting a little antsy and we were on vacation and we were still faxing him stuff. Look, Quicken, this is so much better. Quicken Loans Rocket Mortgage is a really a client-centered technological reinvention of the mortgage approval process. You could do it all online. That's big right away, right? No going to the bank at all. You could do it from your couch. You could do it from an open house. You could do it on your smartphone. Just go to rocketmortgage.com/windows. And they'll ask a few simple questions you already know the answer to. Then, because they have relationships with all the financial institutions, with your permission, they get the information they need. They go to the attic, in effect, and get the information they need. Crunch the numbers. Then, based on your income, your assets, your credit, they make you an offer. They tell you which loans you qualify for. You can, at that point, choose your rate, your term, your down payment. It's completely transparent. You know every step of the way what's going on. And then, boom, you got a mortgage. Or, I should say, a refi as well. You don't have to be buying a house. You could be refinancing your existing house. And interest rates are starting to trend up, as you've probably noticed. Now might be a good time to lock in a lower interest rate at Rocket Mortgage. RocketMortgage.com/Windows is the address. Bookmark that, or better yet, set up the account so you'll be ready when that perfect home comes along. RocketMortgage.com/windows. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLSConsumerAccess.org, number 3030. RocketMortgage.com/windows. We thank them so much for their support of Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley. We are talking Microsoft. I feel like we did this Windows 10 stuff.
Yeah.
Right? We did some of it, yeah.
I feel like we did, too.
We didn't mention the HoloLens thing, though. RS4 on HoloLens.
Actually, the Fall Creators thing is kind of interesting because on the eve of
RS4's Fall Creators update. Fall. Release. The next one.
Yeah. The current release just hit over 90% usage across Windows 10 PCs.
Oh, wow. What? 90%?
I believe unprecedented.
Wow.
In fact, I seem to recall in an earlier version, I don't remember which one it was, but it had hit 75% at some point and kind of stuck there. And the feeling was that's probably the realistic top because they're going to be enterprises that are running on older versions and so forth. And no, they just hit 90%. So
that's actually really good news. That really is good news.
That's pretty incredible.
Yeah. I mean, I don't just mean commercially. It means that you got a kind of a homogeneous user base and they're all secure, you know, and up to date. I think that's really good.
Yep.
Well, as secure as you can be. Yep. 90%. Wow.
Yeah.
So that must be 90% of PCs that are eligible and where people want it, right?
Well, the only thing you can say about the data is that it should represent 90% of all Windows 10 PCs that are in use. And
are there Windows 10 PCs that couldn't do the Fall Creators update? We're talking about 17.
Well, probably. Well, maybe. Just say even if they are, technically they should be counted in this number.
Okay.
It's only Windows 10 PCs, right? It's not earlier Windows versions.
No, I was thinking also some enterprises, you know, are trying to hold back from going to the latest version because they're not ready.
I mean, this also, you got to understand where the data is taken from, right? So data from apps and so forth. And so, I can't say only consumer. There's no real way to say exactly. But there are going to be enterprises where no one is running any store apps that are providing this kind of data and are not going to be counted, of course. But that's always been the case. I mean, so.
Yeah.
It's one of those things. It's like a fitness tracker. I don't know what it's measuring, but at least I can compare it to what it used to measure. And as long as they haven't changed anything, it's still an interesting comparison. So we've never seen this level of deployment of a Windows 10 update, to my understanding. And if you think back to previous versions of Windows, you can look at usage share data from, you know, net market share or whatever. There's never been a circumstance. Well, actually, we don't know that. I was going to say there's never been a circumstance where a Windows version hit 90%. But I guess this would be equated to like Windows 7 SP1 is probably above 90%. But we don't have any real way to know that.
And there's also, it's a different world. I mean, they require you to update, right? I mean, you can only defer it so far and stuff like that. I mean, but that's good. I mean, honestly,
but it shows that the process is
it's working,
right?
Yeah. Getting better. Yeah.
Yeah. I think, I mean, it's not, of course, there's commercial reasons for this that Microsoft has, but I think for the world in general, this is a good thing. Over and above Microsoft's own personal, you know, need to have everybody on one version. It's good for security. It's good for stability.
It's good for developers.
Good for developers. Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, yeah. I'm, that's good. That's amazing in a way.
Yep. I think so.
Yeah. Okay. RS4. We have an RTM candidate. We mentioned that. Coming to the HoloLens. Is that a separate build or is that?
So it has the same build number. But, you know, when you run Windows 10 on the HoloLens, it's definitely suited for the HoloLens. But what's really interesting here, and I didn't realize this until this news came out this week, the HoloLens didn't get updated with Windows 10 since the anniversary update. That was 2016. Yeah. And so this is the first new Windows 10 version particularly built for the HoloLens since then. And the first version went to testers of this this week.
Nice.
Yeah, the complaints about that happening are so old now, I had forgotten about this.
Yeah.
Because that was kind of an issue back in the day, you know, a year ago or a month, you know, months ago, whatever. And yeah, I'd forgotten about it completely.
Yeah.
Okie
dokie. Okie dokie.
As long as we're on the subject.
Mm-hmm.
Multi-session desktop app remoting support. Have we mentioned that in Redstone 5?
No.
I don't think I've ever heard of this until
This is some information that I started seeing leaks about this and people saying, you know what, I'm hearing there's some kind of a new remoting capability that Microsoft's going to put in Windows 10 soon, but I don't know anything about it. And then someone showed me something that showed something called Windows 10 multi-session, like as a thing. And so you know the way right now you have to have a server if you want to use remote desktop services? It sounds to me like you're going to be able to use Windows 10 that way for a finite number of users. Not like a ton of users like you can with server, but maybe like a handful of users. And so the reason you'll be able to do this is before PCs weren't powerful enough and the operating system wasn't powerful enough to drive something like this, but now it is. And Microsoft's also trying to get people off of the GUI on server. So it makes a lot of sense to kind of make this more of a client thing. I don't have a lot of details about it. And, you know, different people are trying to put the pieces together here and figure it out. But of course, Microsoft's not willing to talk about it because it's, sounds like it's Redstone 5, and it's definitely something they haven't announced yet. But keep your ear to the ground for that one. It'd be pretty. People who understand this a lot more than I do, when I wrote about this, they're like, if you're right about this, this is going to be huge and a huge game changer.
It's just like calculator.
You know, calculator or multi-session. It's kind of the same thing, multi-session. But, you know.
No, you know why? It's because a lot of admins sit on multiple machines all day.
They do,
And so that's who really is happy about this is IT guys.
IT pros. Admins.
Yeah. Yeah. Because they want to have, you know, multiple machines open. I've seen people do this in many situations.
Yeah.
Good. I didn't realize it didn't have that, actually. So that's a good thing.
Yeah. You know, it's Microsoft's licensing around remote desktop services makes this super complicated and expensive.
It's not technically difficult, but it's licensing.
Yeah. Like I had people saying, I already do this right now. And I'm like, yeah, but you do it illegally. Right. And the person's like,
now
yeah.
I understand. Now I get it. Yeah.
Thank you for telling me that. I'll report you to Microsoft licensing.
Now I understand.
Yeah.
All right, so here we are 2 weeks in on the NVX2, the first Windows on ARM machine. I actually find myself using it more. I've gotten used to the sluggishness.
Wow. It's like I had a stroke and I just kind of got used to it.
Just got used to it. Like, I have faster machines. And in fact, it's kind of funny when I fire up the ThinkPad, I go, wow, that thing's fast. But it's usable, I guess, is my point. What is your experience?
So, I mean, I went through, it's like the seven stages of guilt, the seven stages of Windows 10 on ARM, you know. And
yeah.
I wanted to test very specific things. So, like, I tested the battery life first. Yes, it was almost exactly 20 hours.
Yeah, that's great. It's amazing.
App compatibility, which is kind of an interesting topic. And this is the thing we kind of alluded to earlier, where I talked about it being like S mode, but kind of off to the side of S mode. So Windows 10 on ARM on this machine, and I think on all machines in this first gen, ships in S mode, right? Or it didn't, because it's 1709, it ships in with Windows 10 Pro. I'm sorry, Windows 10 S, which is Pro and S mode, right? That is how it ships. But you could, of course, switch to Pro, full Pro. And when you do that, you get application compatibility with the desktop.
And, of course, that's something you and I both did immediately.
I did on purpose, knowing that I would be going back to S mode at some point.
Really?
To test it properly. Yeah, although this is where I'm heading. So the thing is, you got to remember that even when you enable Pro, full Pro, like if you switch out of S mode, you don't actually get full compatibility. It takes a couple of different forms. You don't get those features that are just missing on ARM, Hyper-V, and so forth. You don't get 64-bit app support. This is true both in the store and on the desktop. And so I think you noticed this while we were doing the show, but you can download Google Chrome. It actually is smart enough somehow to get the 32-bit version. It works fine. Adobe Photoshop Elements 15, I think is the version I have. I bought it through the store a year and a half ago. I install it on all my PCs. Well, no, it's not available on this computer. It's a 64-bit app. So even though it's a store app, it's not going to work in S mode or otherwise. It's a 64-bit app. But then there's that kind of the S mode plus stuff. So you can't install things that are drivers, right? Because unless there's an ARM driver, of which there are none today out in the world. So a Microsoft mouse is a great example. Microsoft Surface Precision Mouse. One of the weird things about S mode on any computer is that the Microsoft mouse and keyboard software will not install in S mode. It's a desktop application. So I thought, well, this is kind of interesting. Like this thing will run desktop applications. That application is available in a 32-bit version. It's just an application, right? I'm not trying to install a driver. The mouse works. Maybe the application will still be able to control the mouse and let me configure the buttons. And the answer to that question is no, it doesn't work.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It's goofy because it actually installs. But then
I've had a lot of situations like that.
I did too. That's just the big one. You know, that I think that's a good example because I've talked about the mouse thing in the past. But yeah, same thing. So app compatibility is kind of mixed. I went from there to performance, and you know, like anyone using this, you don't have to look too hard. I mean, the performance is slow. But the thing that I noticed and the realization I came to was, I'm using this wrong, and I did it on purpose. But if you stick to store apps, and including, by the way, the Office applications, the performance is surprisingly fine.
Yep.
So
that's
my example
weird.
Here is,
it's as if Microsoft tweaked its stuff.
Yeah, which I'm absolutely okay with.
So that's mostly what people are using, right?
Yeah, and so this is what I mean by it being sideways to S. So imagine you buy one of these computers, and you turn S mode off. And you install the one or two little, you know, desktop apps that you really need to get your life together or whatever. If you can stick mostly to store apps and just to use those other apps sometimes, what you're going to get is more of a S mode type experience, meaning that this thing is still streamlined, still performs better, still gets better battery life, and still shouldn't exhibit that same kind of bit rot because it is an ARM-based system, and you're really not going to do – it's almost like you're getting zapped every time you use a desktop app. It's going to make you want to do that less.
Right.
Whereas on like an Intel system, there's no penalty for it. So even though the performance might be degrading over time, even though the battery life might be degrading over time on Intel, you don't really care or think about it because this is what you want to do. But by virtue of the fact, like it's by giving you the power to do it and by making it kind of stink, it almost is helping you get over the need to do it, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided that the, and I, you know, like I went into that kind of artificial thing on purpose, but I'm going to stick with the apps that make sense on this system and see how it does over time. I've been kind of watching the standby stuff. I installed two builds of the Windows 10 Insider Preview on this thing and did a bunch of other stuff in between them, and I never charged the device. Like I would never attempt
to do that. It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah. I'm going away this week, so I have a data sim, and I'm gonna write up that stuff. I tested the pen. That is actually pretty laggy, unfortunately.
Yeah, even in negative experiences.
Yeah. And I brought up my Apple Pencil because last year I tested it against the new Surface Pen. I found those to be very comparable. I had to charge the thing, which is beautiful because you get to stick it up the butt of the iPad to charge it. But that thing is so fluid and so lag-free and so natural feeling. I hate to say this, but I mean, it is kind of magical. Like it's amazing. And then you go to the HP thing and, you know, as you're moving the pen across the screen, the ink that you're drawing is trailing it by, you know, like whatever that is, like a 16th of an inch or something, but it's noticeably laggy. And I think for writing, like for taking notes and so forth, it's probably okay. When I just write with it, it's fine. Other than the fact that I can't read anything I write, but when I try to draw with it, it's just not precise enough. It doesn't, precise isn't the right word. It doesn't keep up well enough for drawing or painting to make sense. Mm-hmm. And that's too bad. Cause it's kind of a cool, it's a tablet.
It's a nice screen. I mean, if it were, boy, I can't believe how closely your experience mirrors mine.
Hmm. Yeah.
I agree 100%. Somebody's asking if you ever were able to run Passmark or any other benchmarks. I could not, because it needs a signed driver, and it doesn't have one.
Yeah, I have not tried to do benchmarks. I don't think those are fair. You know, the benefit of the well. ARM platform is the big and the little cores.
Right.
And the reason you get the standby is that when you close the lid or put it to sleep or whatever, it's using the small cores.
Right.
And so it's sipping very, very little energy. And for this reason, unless Intel changes the architecture of their chips, they're never going to be able to duplicate this. I mean, they might get the battery life. Like, I'm sure there will be Intel devices that, and I have Intel devices that get, you know, 15 hours of battery life or whatever, but they're never going to be able to duplicate the standby time because it's not possible to put that thing into a sleep that is that deep. Mm-hmm. It just isn't possible.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think a benchmark would misrepresent it. I can guarantee you it's going to be slow. It's going to have very low numbers.
But real world
is more usable than one would think.
I equate it to what my experience has been on a Core M type system, a Y series chip. It's got that vibe to it, you know. Mm-hmm. And there's kind of a creeping thing to the performance too. I don't know if you noticed this, but you know, the first time you load like Microsoft Word, for example, it comes up a little, you know, slowly. The thing draws, you know, the little about box comes up and everything. And then it's fine.
Yeah.
You know, like then it's fine.
Yeah. No, I'm totally, it's like I'm totally used to it. And I know, well, okay, it's going to take a second. Yeah. And you just get used to it and it's usable. And from then on, you launch it. It's usually fast. There's some caching going on, obviously. Do you, now you have an 8 gig version. I only have the 4 gig version. So you probably have less lagginess than I do.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay.
I don't know. Maybe. I don't know. I mean, I run several programs simultaneously. It seems fine. I spent two hours at a coffee shop. Yesterday with Lisa programming, I was on the SIM chip, and it was great.
I don't have this here. Maybe you could show this to Mary Jo, but the device is not lappable in any sense.
No,
right.
Well, and part of the reason
you
is
can
that
kinda
the fixed
do,
end.
You could put it. Okay, if you cross your legs, you
well,
can
no,
put
not
a
that again.
Stand on the leg.
Well, no, but even that. So look at where the triangle is that's formed by the kickstand. The point of the triangle, the silver tip there.
Yeah.
That thing is not attached to that machine.
No, it comes off all the time. Attached.
That thing comes off very easily. Yeah. The other goofy thing about it, I don't know if you can show this easily, but if you close it, just close the whole thing.
Yeah.
The way that you, if you're used to a Surface Pro or any device like a Surface Pro, you're very used to kicking out the kickstand from the bottom.
Oh, yeah. I rip this off all the time. It comes from the top.
It's the exact opposite. Yeah. And no, granted, I think if you just used one computer, you'd get used to it.
Yeah.
But the problem is when you open it from the top that way, I do it because I'm, you know, huge and really strong. I separate it from the laptop
every
all
time.
The time.
Every time.
Yeah.
You have to kind of, you have to, it takes a little training.
Be gentle.
Well, you just have to learn it. It's a twist of the wrist. It's not a pull.
Yeah.
It's a twist of the wrist.
It's,
but you get used to it. And I don't mind it. I mean, I have to say, it's got infinite, you know, like the new Surface, you have, you can have, you can go pretty shallow.
Well, but okay, but you know what? Okay, here's what you lose though. With the Surface Pro, you can lean that thing back really far.
Yeah.
I think they call it studio mode. And then you can draw on it using a slight angle to the screen.
Yeah.
With this device, you can't really do that.
Why not?
Because if you start drawing on it, the thing's going to slap down to the table.
Is it really? Okay. You got to draw less hard, Paul.
Like I said, humongous. But
okay.
It's just.
No, you're right. It's kind of this at a shallow angle. This pushes down really easily. You're exactly right.
You can't. Yeah. You can't write on it.
No. Yeah. You need it to be.
It's okay.
At a pretty
oblique angle. Don't get me wrong. I'm not. Maybe this is nitpicking or whatever, but I actually like this design. I think it's pretty elegant. I like the typing experience. It's a little, you know, when it's at that angle, you know, you get that thing where you're kind of hitting it, and the whole
board
thing is bouncing.
Boing,
a little
boing,
bit,
boing. But, yeah, that's all right.
But it's, you know what? It's okay. I type hard, and I'm able to type on it like that.
It rattles a little bit. It's fine.
Yeah.
It's not the end of the world. In other words, it's one of those computers where you go, it's okay. It's like, you know, I can live with it. It's not one of those things you go,
though,
you've got to get this. It's the greatest thing. I can live with it.
People are going to hear this and say, great, it's okay. But it doesn't cost $400. It costs $1,000.
Exactly.
And actually, the version I have probably costs $1,300. Right. I don't even know how much that one is.
I have the base.
So how do you justify
that? You can get a nice laptop for less. Why wouldn't you?
Well, because I think
20 hours battery life.
This is
SIM card.
Right.
Some laptops have SIM, don't they?
Yes. But where they're positioning this is against the iPad Pro. And I think the idea here is that we've accepted the fact that for some people, you're going to be out in the world using your phone most of the time. But every once in a while, you need to crack the thing open and use a real keyboard, work on a document or a spreadsheet or whatever it is. And the advantage of this thing over an iPad Pro, aside from double the battery life or whatever, is that it runs real Office. And actually, that experience is pretty damn good. So, you know, if you want full Excel, which is much better than the mobile Excel version, or full Word, which frankly for me, I don't think is all that better, but is better. Full PowerPoint, full Outlook, whatever it might be, those things are available on this.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm not 100% saying it makes sense. But this is the positioning. And does it satisfy that need? Yeah, I do. You know, does it justify $1,000? I don't know.
Here's what we always said about the iPad, and I think it's very much true of this. It's not your only laptop.
Mm-hmm.
If this were your only laptop, I'd have to recommend against it. But it's for somebody who has some money and is willing to spend some money on technology, who has maybe, as I do, a Yoga or something, an X1 Carbon, that's the big heavy-duty main machine, and it's, you know, pretty portable. But when they need something like a Folio, like for an airplane, and they want to watch a movie, there's a use for it. I'll tell you, I'm probably not bringing this to Japan. I've been trying to think, is this enough?
Yeah. And it's not. So here's something. I'm not going to do this, per se, but When I go, I'm going to Denver for 4 days, basically, right? So I'm trying to understand if this is like a big deal. My Fitbit gets almost a week of battery life. So I know that I don't have to bring a charger for the Fitbit.
Oh my
I don't
God,
have to worry
he's
about that.
Go charger free.
So, no well, first charge. Of all, I'm not only bringing this computer because I need to get work done too. And I can't, you know, I'm me, you know, whatever. So I'm going to bring a ThinkPad as well. I'm not going to bring the charger for the HP. That's a little cheap to say because the Lenovo charger is going to work, but what I am going to do is not charge the thing. Right. So I have the fallback. I'm going to play it safe and not bring the charger, but would it be a game changer of some kind? If I could travel to Colorado, do a little bit of work on Thursday and Friday, probably a little bit of work on Saturday morning and then fly home Sunday. Yeah. Which is what I'm doing and never have to charge a thing. Is that like a game changer or is it not a big deal just to throw a charger in a bag? I don't know.
It's a big deal if you are just carrying it in a purse or a very small bag, right?
Okay, right. I'm bringing a giant manly backpack. But yes, if it you could carry this thing like a little, what do you call it? Like a little portfolio
overnight
or whatever.
Bag. Overnight bag.
Yes. Yes. I mean, you wouldn't even notice. It probably weighs a pound, 0.7, something like that. It's, you know, it's light.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we agree 100%. I think it's an important caveat that it probably shouldn't be your only machine.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have the luxury of having a second, just I mean, I always wonder when I see people using their iPad as their primary. I think that's crazy.
But some people are able to do that. Those people have emotional problems. But
I feel like it's you're putting up with some pain that you don't need to put up with, kind of. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. But okay, but they must feel that the benefit of having to carry this thing that they don't have to worry about charging, that's so light.
Yeah.
You know, but again, I think there's this use case. You only need the keyboard sometimes.
Right.
When you do, you really need it, right? For whatever reason, someone sent you a document, you have to edit it, whatever it might be. But that is only like once a week or something.
Yeah.
This is not my life, right? So I'm trying to put myself in the position of someone who is lucky enough to be like that.
The person who you're describing who is like that is an executive, right? Like somebody who doesn't actually make the PowerPoint, but who has to like just go, okay, check.
Bring it up and look at it and say no to this and yes. Exactly.
Or, I think a salesperson who gives presentations, this would be great.
Yep.
It's always connected. You don't have to worry if you're going to have connectivity or join the GEC. Mm-hmm. It's kind of embarrassing. You're going to make a presentation. Mm-hmm. You say, what's your Wi-Fi? That's embarrassing. So you don't have to worry about that. You've got the pen. You can annotate. You can have a PowerPoint. You can annotate. I think this is a great sales tool, for instance. Mm-hmm. So there are use cases that would make a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, the emulation stuff can only get better. There's going to be an 845 happening in these systems sometime this year.
Are we going to see 64-bit on these?
Yeah, there's some question as to the timing and what that means exactly. So they have said this, I believe. Didn't we have this conversation?
Yeah, they said ARM 64, yes, but they're not going to support 64-bit Intel apps.
Oh, there you go. All right, so that's kind of a
huge problem.
What
does that mean?
ARM 64, yeah. Well, it's a 64-bit OS. So if you were to write an ARM 64 app, which...
Are people putting ARM 64 apps on here?
No. Well, you wouldn't know you were doing it, right? So when you get a store app,
it could be like a bundle.
These are just checkboxes. If you're a developer and you've already compiled this thing for the store for Intel, you can just check boxes and get it on ARM. That's easy. But the trick is going to be the desktop apps. And what this sounds like to me is that Photoshop is never going to work on this thing. So...
And the reason you can't do 64-bit Intel on it is because it's using the Windows on Windows subsystem to do the emulation, right? And so that lets you do 32-bit apps on 64-bit processors.
So you answered my question. It's not going to have Intel 64.
Mm-mm.
Okay, that's what it sounds like. Yeah,
that doesn't. That's another kind of a lot of programs I can't run that I would like to run.
It's weird, to the average user, I put it on Twitter, a week ago, probably some kind of a screenshot of this thing saying no to a 64-bit app. And someone's like, well, what kind of a user needs to know about blah, 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 whatever. This is something no one has to think about. I'm like, do you have any idea what I just put a picture of? A normal person goes to the web and tries to run an app and it says,
that's what they see.
This is my point. You're putting this in front of a normal person. They don't know what that means, and they don't know how to fix it. They can't, by the way, in most cases.
Unless there's a 32-bit version, you're out of luck.
Yeah, right. But you're making them think about something technical.
Right.
Go back to the website and see if there's a 32-bit version. What does that mean?
Well, that was ultimately the problem with RT, was it looked like it was Windows, but it didn't run Windows at all your Windows apps or any.
Yeah. I mean, really. this pushes
that
much
was the problem.
Further, but it's still, ultimately, you're going to hit some of those weird little roadblocks. And
that's not good.
That's
not good.
Yeah.
Hey, have you heard any? In fact, what I would probably say is for most people, you'd get a Surface instead, a Surface Pro instead.
And spend
the money if you want this.
How about don't even spend the money? Spend $9.99 to $12.99, the same price, and you'll get a much better Surface Pro.
What you won't get is Type-C charging, but you can live with that, right? But I think really that's the real question. Should I get this or a Surface Pro? And I'd spend a little more and get a Surface Pro, frankly.
Yeah.
It is more because if you want the LTE, that's expensive.
That's fair.
You're
right. You're right. Yeah.
And you don't get the battery life either. So.
No, I don't remember what the Surface Pro came up, but Surface Laptop was in the 13-hour range. Surface Book 2 was 15-ish. I mean, Surface Pro is probably pretty good.
Yeah. All right.
You're not going to get the standby, and you're not, the battery life won't
be. You know what the funny thing is? This did kind of open my eyes to Surface Pro. Like, maybe I could, maybe that wouldn't be such a bad form factor. Mm. You know, I was kind of, I'm really skeptical of the tablet with a floppy keyboard.
So what would sell Surface Pro is the Thunderbolt port.
Gosh darn it,
that
yes.
That doesn't exist. Yep. You know, then you could do the single wire dock.
Yep, please. I beg whatever. Of you.
And then,
beg of you, Microsoft.
Yeah.
I beg of you. Hey, have you heard any good Surface hardware rumors lately? Any chance?
What's the word in the street?
What's the word? What's the word?
The word is dongle.
That's a good word. One of my favorites.
Sounds like something we would have called someone in gym in high school. You're a
exactly.
Dongle.
You're a dongle. So this was supposed to show up last year, wasn't it? Microsoft said they were going to provide a USB-C dongle for Surfaces. For people who were like, I can't live without the USB-C port.
Okay, but those people don't exist, by the way. But I think that's why we haven't seen it.
So it hasn't shown up. The Walking Cat posted a picture of, I think, what must be the old design for this.
I don't know if do we have a way to show what this looks like? Because it connects to the Surface connector.
And it looks like a
giant
brick.
Box. It looks like a power brick. And it's got
port.
A tiny little one USB-C port at the end of it. And it's like, what's inside of that? A computer?
That can't be what it looks like, right? I mean,
is there a Raspberry Pi powering this thing?
Like, I know. But I think it was Tom Warren who went to Microsoft and said, so are you guys ever going to ship this? And they said, yeah, we are this year. Sometime this year. But they didn't say that device, right? They just said, we will ship a dongle.
That thing doesn't solve a very big problem.
No, it doesn't.
Anyone can plug in a little hub off of the USB port that's also on the Surface and get a USB-C port that way. USB-C is just another port for the same stuff that is wrong with Surface. What Surface needs, and that's the point of this bring the Thunderbolt thing, is they need to bring Thunderbolt 3 to all of their products that Surface does. And I think it should replace Surface Connect. Because it is the one port that does it all. Power, data, pass-through, display, external GPU.
So this is what you the Walking Cat...
That's like, look how huge that is.
That can't be it. That cannot be it.
That's crazy.
I think that might have been the old look.
You know what? I bet that is a power brick. That connects to the Surface Connect.
Oh, that's what it
so
is.
I think you're supposed to put
Surface
a USB-C
on one
cable.
End,
and you yeah, this a, is supposed to go up to a wall plug.
Yeah.
That's USB-C based. I bet that's a power brick. That's why it's.
Yeah.
I bet it's a power brick. Yeah.
Now, what we don't see is what's on the other side because, you know, there are companies. I've seen Apple or somebody do this where they have other Type C's on the side there. Okay. Third parties for the Apple.
Too. And Microsoft does that right now for their existing Surface
the,
power
dock.
Supplies.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, for the power supply, they have a USB port at the back
there. Okay.
For device charging. Yeah.
It's nice to do that. I mean, you're going to have to carry that thing around anyway, so you might as well give it some.
Yeah, it's like it's a little gimme that on there. It's a nice touch.
Oh, just Type C in general. Just so I mean, everything's Type C now.
I can finally
rest.
So they'll have to, but they'd have to come out with brand new models of all of their machines to do what you want them to do.
I will make you a deal, Microsoft. Do it, and I'll buy it.
Yeah,
you'll buy it right on the show.
I mean, right here, right now.
Obviously, any one of these things could have small changes, but consider all of their devices right now. Laptop, Pro, Surface Book 2, Surface Studio, and Surface Hub doesn't really factor into this too much, but those mostly portable devices and then the Studio. Just get rid of the Surface Connect.
Yeah, please.
And replace it with Thunderbolt 3, at least one of them.
Is there anything it does that they... That's Thunderbolt?
You don't have to change the rest of the machine. Just do that.
Is there anything that connects... thing dongle does that the Thunderbolt can't do?
No. Just be slower. That's all it can do.
It can be slower. If you do a full Thunderbolt port, it's a USB 40
port with a
40
different shape and
a
magnetic connector. That's all it is.
Yeah. It's got video. It's got audio. It's got everything. It's got data.
I don't think people understand how transformative it can be. Imagine you had a Surface Pro with this Thunderbolt 3. It's just the exact machine we have today. Well, it would probably be quad-core now too, but the exact machine, but with Thunderbolt 3 on the side.
Nice.
You could plug a GPU into it, and it would be a gaming machine.
Sweet.
You can't do that over USB.
No.
Right. You have to have Thunderbolt 3. you could drive two external 4K displays at 60 hertz and whatever other peripherals and that GPU. I mean, like, you could do all this stuff.
I bet the reason they didn't do it before now or haven't done it yet is because they're trying to get rid of inventory of parts or PCs, right? Like, they're trying to get rid of what they have. Is my guess.
That could be part of it, but I first asked Microsoft, I looked this up. It was late 2015. I said, seriously, Surface, USB-C. 2016, I said, seriously, Surface, Thunderbolt 3 and USB-C. Since then, they've released a new Surface Pro, a Surface Laptop, and a new Surface Book 2 in two form factors. Oh, and Surface Studio.
Right.
None of which have Thunderbolt 3, and only one of which has a USB-C port. Mm-hmm. Guys. Seriously, I think what this really points to is the fact that Microsoft, for as big of a company as it is and as famous as Microsoft is they're basically a boutique PC maker. You know, they're not a Dell or a Lenovo or an HP. No. They're like this tiny little company. They only have, they only control like 2.5% of the market for Windows 10 devices in use.
Yeah.
It's tiny. Right. And I just think they don't have the, I don't want to say the expertise, that's unfair, but. They just don't
leverage,
have the volume,
right?
They just don't have a way to, you know, and you know, people always come with these excuses, you know, like, oh, you know, the USB chargers can fry PCs and blah blah blah, and, you know, but all the real PC makers already built circuits into their computers to prevent this. You know, this problem's been solved. I don't know. They really need to do this. It's so overdue.
And, you know, so the question keeps coming up, especially when this dongle thing came up again this week, is when are they going to refresh the various lines, right? And so we don't really know, right? I mean,
I haven't heard anything.
No. I mean, everybody's like, well, they just refreshed the Surface Pro, right, last fall. So it's probably not going to be before fall for that line, I wouldn't think.
Right.
And although, Surface like Laptop. Laptop came out in May last year or around there. So maybe they're going to refresh that first.
I would literally accept one port if it was that port. I wouldn't care. It'd be better if two. Honestly, these things are so small in your existing space. You could do two. If you think about how Surface Laptop, Surface Pro, and Surface Book 1 and 2 have both a USB port of some kind. And a video port of some kind, typically mini display port. Oh, and a Surface Connect port for expansion and power. You could make the argument that all of those machines could have three USB-C / Thunderbolt 3 ports. But you know what? I would take one because it does everything. I don't know. I don't know why things take so long. I don't get it.
Yeah, so we don't know. Like, everybody was like, oh, so it must be really soon that they're going to do the refresh on these lines. And I'm like, I don't know. I mean... They could do a spring refresh and then a fall. They've been kind of falling into that pattern lately.
The other issue is that this is particularly problematic for Surface Laptop and Surface Pro, but also is the case with Surface Studio, is that these things are still on dual-core Intel chips. Actually, sorry, the Surface Studio might be a quad-core chip. I might be wrong about that one. But
it feels Surface pretty slow, whatever it is.
It's kind of laptop class. But the... Surface Book 2, I believe, has the newer gen, the 8th gen quad core, so it benefits from that improvement. Plus, it has DGPUs inside, which is great. But, you know, you get an automatic performance boost by just going 8th gen. I mean, 8th gen plus Thunderbolt 3, what I'm saying is just do that. Forget the rest of, don't do new style, don't change the body, don't change anything else. Just do those two things. And you've got a, that, you've got a good year of life out of those things before you have to think about it again.
Yeah, the thing that we know is likely to show up this year in the Surface line is Surface Hub, the new Surface Hub. But beyond that, you know, which
models
get refreshed?
But that's a custom product that I don't know how even know how that equates to a PC internally. But
I know, same. And then Andromeda, right? Which is the dual screen foldable.
You know,
that
thing's going to come out with like a micro SD or a micro USB port. You know, just to screw with us instead of USB-C. It's like, yeah, we got a really good deal on these things.
Oh, that would be so horrible.
No, they're not going to do that.
No, I know, but that would be so Microsoft.
They've updated Edge for iOS and Android. A lot of people talking about it. Got some buzz.
So
I like it, actually.
Edge was already on iOS on phones and Android phones. as of a couple months ago, I believe. But this week, they said now you can get Edge for iPads and Android tablets. And it's free, and you can get it from the store. I think it's good to remember why Microsoft's doing this, right? Like the one reason is for people who use Windows PCs who want to have their bookmarks and other things sync across other devices that they might have. But it's also because Microsoft's trying to figure out how to stay relevant as a player in mobile, right? And they have this whole continue on PC idea where if you've got something, you know, you're working on, you want to be able to continue with it on another device, that the way they're kind of tying you into that and trying to make you do that is through Edge. So I don't know how many people use Edge on iOS or Android. I have Edge installed on Android, and I have to admit, I almost never use it. But it's there.
I see.
Yeah.
You can make it your default browser, can't you?
You can.
Yeah.
You can. Yep. But why?
I tried to install it on Chrome, but just to, you know, kind of screw with the universe a little bit, but it's not compatible yet. That probably will happen. Honestly, the full screen experience on an iPad, which is how I'm using it, is great. I mean, it's good. Yeah. You know, obviously it uses the underlying browser engine. It will one day support eBooks, which is kind of, you know, if for whatever reason you're buying eBooks from Microsoft, that's where you're going to want to read them, not on your computer. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of cool. Mm-hmm. But, you know, of course, the bigger issue with Edge is that it's Microsoft Edge. And I, you know, every version of Windows 10, they rev this thing. And every version of Windows 10, I kind of look at it again. And I just did it. I'm actually using Edge as my default browser right now. It's a little bit like punching yourself in the face because it's it's a little bit like punching yourself in the face.
Period. Full stop.
You know, it's weird because honestly, Mary Jo, I think, had said last week, probably or 2 weeks ago, that Microsoft Edge is in a place where most normal people could use it, and that a lot of normal people wouldn't even notice they were using Microsoft Edge if they just got Windows 10. And I am here to say that I completely agree with that. That is absolutely true. The problem, it has improved. No, it really has. It has improved to that point. They've added a bunch of neat stuff to it. It's much better than it was. But for me, personally, I keep running into these things, and it's very similar to the situation with Windows 10S, where, you know, you kind of want to do the right thing, as we're going to think of it, but you keep hitting like a little bit of a wall, and when you hit enough of them, you're like, I can't do this anymore, you know, and it just becomes a problem. So I've been taking notes, and I just want to, if you don't mind, I'd like to just kind of list out the things I've noticed over the past couple of days, right? So for some of these are not a big deal, but some of them are bigger deals. You know, Chrome, for example, lets you mute websites, which I love. Edge lets you mute tabs, which is fine, but then you go back to the site, it's the videos, you know, again. Yeah, so it's just a little thing, you know, whatever. I mentioned this one to Mary Jo the other day. When you click on a link that is a Twitter link and it loads twitter.com/some username/whatever it is, that almost never works for me in Edge for some reason. It actually says something like Twitter is busy. And then I load it in Chrome and it works fine. And I have no idea why.
That is really weird.
but the big ones are the things that I do for work on a daily basis. So, for example, I will often embed a video at the top of an article. Like when I post this show tomorrow, I will embed a video you know, at the top of the article that's about this episode. And when I go to get that embed code from YouTube, the pop-up window that occurs is shifted off to the edge of the screen, and the embed code is half off the screen. And I can still go over it and kind of, you know, select it, sort of, but there's a copy button that I don't see because it's off the edge of the screen, and that would be easier. It's just kind of weird. But the bigger issues involve WordPress, which is how I post things to the web, and I have a lot of problems there. There's weird stuff. It's kind of hard to explain, but if you could imagine a body of text and you got an image and you're going to drag it into the editor, and you want it to appear between two paragraphs, I would say 8 times out of 10, when the drag is complete and the image appears, Edge starts adding blank lines under the picture. And until I click somewhere in the editor, it won't stop.
That's a bug.
And then I have to go into text mode and remove all the little extra spaces.
That's really bad.
If I add an image to the top of an article, it puts, you know, the ampersand, MBSP, whatever it is, for a space or like a new line or whatever.
Non-breaking space, yeah.
Non-breaking space, thank you. It adds one of those. I don't know why. It adds, so it's like extra white of it.
Do you have a customized version of WordPress, or do you use just a generic one?
So I don't know. I mean, I think every version of WordPress is probably customized.
Yeah, because, you know, like our CMS at ZDNet, it doesn't work with every browser. Like, it doesn't work. It never used to work right with Internet Explorer.
All right, but but if I can't use this for work, then in some
that's
ways,
a deal breaker.
The reason in whatever ways doesn't matter. The other thing is, you guys could test.
By the way, that's all
right
market share. That just means that they test with Chrome because it's got dominant market share.
Yeah,
and then go down the list: Firefox, Safari.
So here's
Internet
what I just
Explorer,
saw today.
Edge.
Just you guys could test this right now to see if this happens to you in Microsoft Edge. If you do a web search for Xbox Wire. Xbox Wire is Microsoft's blog for the Xbox, right? And they will often put embed a video in their articles about whatever it is. And so I wanted to read an article today about Resident Evil 7 Biohazard being enhanced for Xbox One X, because this is a game I like and I might actually want to play through it again in 4K or whatever it is. And there's a video. And when you click the play button on the YouTube video, the area where the video is goes white and no video plays. It just whites out the space. Mm-hmm. I tried it in Chrome and obviously it works. I tried it in a private tab because I don't know, maybe it's one of the few extensions I'm using. It does the same thing, you know, and it's not the first time I've seen it, but that's the one I took a note of. And it's like, you know, I don't know. Some of these are deal breakers, I guess. Some of them are just like, you know, whatever, but this is just like a couple of days of this is where it breaks for me, you know? And
so I just tried your experiment on Edge on Android, and it also does not work.
Yeah, there you go. By the way, Microsoft browser, Microsoft website, and this doesn't work.
Yeah, they should test it with Edge.
No, I'm just people think I'm like picky. Like,
really,
I don't understand what the problem is. Like, why are you dumping on Edge all the time? And it's like, no, I am literally trying to use this thing every single day.
I don't even get the spinning anymore. It's just sitting there. It's just white.
Yep, same.
Okay, so you're seeing what I saw. This is my point. Yep.
Let me just.
And I just.
That's crazy.
At some point, you just kind of give up. And then I'll hear from people like, oh, you always dump it on Edge. You're such a jerk. And it's like, I but I'm trying.
No, those are legitimate complaints for sure.
Yeah. All right. That's all. Back to my main point, which was your contention that this thing is good enough for most. When I go back and I look at the complaints that I was making about Edge in the last version of Windows 10 or two versions ago, whatever it is.
This might be an Xbox Wire problem because this is Chrome.
I know. I wonder.
Actually got this to load in Chrome. That's funny.
This might be an Xbox Wire problem.
Not interesting. Okay. All right.
Good to know. Just to be fair, let's be fair.
Yep. Well, I am trying to be fair, but I'm trying.
No, you know, somebody asked me on Twitter the other day, and this I have you know when people get your inconsistency and they point it out on Twitter, and you want to have a retort, but you're like, no, I don't have one.
Because
this person said, you always talk about Edge being okay for normals, but like, don't most people who are normal use Chrome on Windows machines because it has like the runaway market share? So how do they get it if they're normal?
It depends what you mean by normal.
It does. But like I was thinking, so my retort was, and I didn't send this because I thought it was weak, but I'm like, okay, on my mom's PC, she has Chrome. Who put it on there? One of us did, one of the kids, right?
Yeah, like, mom
doesn't.
I'm like, that's a good point.
Mary, well, actually, so this is a conversation we had kind of privately, a week or so ago, whatever. I don't know if it was with regards to this topic or not, but I said something to the effect of, you know, familiarity is underrated. And what I meant by that was that, you know, you get used to doing things a certain way and it's kind of hard to switch. And like, why bother? I mean, why go through the pain when what you're doing is fine? And so I think what happened was Internet Explorer was so bad for so long that something really changed for Windows users where we went against the normal grain of just using, and I mean this broadly, not everyone, but the mainstream users, against just working with what was there and actively seeking something else out and using that instead. And so it creates a problem for Edge because A, they use the same stupid E logo basically as IE, and no one looks at that and has a good feeling about it. They're like, ugh, like why would I want that thing? And they actively avoid it. You know, they should have not gone with that name or that logo for one thing. Not that solves their problems, but I think that's one issue. And, you know, frankly, once you get on to something that works for you, and Chrome works great. You're like, sorry, guys. I mean, I hear people complain about like memory usage and things that no one ever thinks about or cares about, honestly, in real life. But EdgeWorks, I mean, Chrome works great. Now you want people to switch from that again? Like, we already switched browsers, guys. We're done. You know, I think there's a real familiarity thing that Microsoft is going to have a hard time overcoming.
Yeah.
So anyway, I'm trying. I take this pain on behalf of the team.
Thanks.
I got to be honest. I don't know how long I can last. I mean, it's, you know, it's painful.
Yeah.
And it's a little, it's like a thousand little cuts, you know?
Yep.
Well, I got to say, if it were a choice between giving up Edge and giving up WordPress.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm sticking with WordPress.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm sticking with WordPress.
No, I know. If it's part of your workflow, you've got to do that. I mean,
I'm just going to say this right now, and WordPress is a sponsor. Mm-hmm. WordPress for me is a non-breaking up space. That's what I say. Get it? Our show today brought to you, back of the book coming up, our show today brought to you by WordPress.com. If you visited leolaporte.com, you know I am a WordPress fanatic. That's where I live online. Paul lives there. Steve Gibson lives there. I mean, some of the best, brightest minds, and I'm not including mine.
And also me.
And also Paul and me use WordPress. And there's a good reason for it. In fact, 30% of the web is running on WordPress. There's a good reason for it. It's a great content management system. And if you don't want to host it yourself, and trust me, you don't, then there's really a great place to go, WordPress.com. Now, I used to have a host with WordPress running on it. I've actually had that since the early 2000s. But once I moved to WordPress.com, man, I realized what I was missing. First of all, it cost me less than paying for a server and putting WordPress on it. WordPress plans start at $4 a month, and they keep it up to date. I don't ever have to worry. WordPress.com, always secure, always up to date. You get hundreds of templates to choose from, all the plugins. It's just an awesome place to hang your hat. You need to have an online presence that you own. Your Facebook page is not it. I think we've learned that, haven't we? Your Twitter feed is not it. You need to have a place that your Facebook links and your Twitter links point back to, the place where you live, your Therot.com, and that's WordPress. WordPress makes it easy to set up. You don't have to be a geek. No coding, no design necessary. Just pick a template, put some content in, you're good to go. Share your voice, your work, your way, your site. It's all yours when you build it on WordPress.com. If at any point you need some help, their customer support team's there 24/7, Monday through Friday, and on weekends too. They've got great e-commerce, for everything from a buy button to a full online store. You can do it all, and it's so easy to set up. When you're ready to expand your business's online reach, WordPress has the tools you need to get your presence out there. Built-in SEO, social sharing is great because when customers or readers or clients visit your website, they can share it on their Facebook, their Twitter. They can spread the word about you. It really leverages it. And by the way, WordPress.com is a community on its own. You can have the WordPress follow button, and there's millions of people there who are part of that community who also will find your site. You might even get featured on the front page there at WordPress.com, and that really drives traffic. By the way, never worry about traffic. WordPress handles it. No matter what you throw at it, they're just awesome. No wonder 30% of all websites run on WordPress. You can get started right now, 15% off when you go to WordPress.com/windows to create your website. 15% off any new website, WordPress.com/windows. Or new plan purchase, 15% off. That's a good deal. Find out why 30% of the web runs on WordPress. WordPress.com/windows. Time for the back of the book, as we call it. Let's kick things off with Paul Therot and his tip of the week.
What is my tip of the week? I feel like we touched on both of my things already today. Oh, yeah. Okay. So
stop touching.
No, it's okay.
It's bad touch.
We are now in what I call the magic window, which is that period of time where the development of one version of Windows 10 is winding down, and you can exit the insider preview and get on the normal development channel without having to you know, keep getting updates and go right into the next version. We don't know how long it's going to last. Microsoft usually provides some kind of a heads up as to, hey, we're switching everyone in the fast ring over to the next version, you know, sometime soon. And the caveat on this is that right now it only applies to the fast ring, because the slow ring is not on the final build yet. They're on, I think, the previous build. So when that happens, everyone in the insider preview, except I guess those in RS5, will be able to get off the train. For now, fast ring users can. So I use this opportunity to I actually went for the PCs that weren't on RS4 already, sign up for the insider preview, signed up for fast, downloaded the build, installed it, rebooted, got out of insider preview. And now they're on the, what will in any day now be the shipping version.
That was such a satisfying thing when I did that. I did that last year.
It took me a long time. I did it on like 7 computers. It was kind of funny. So basically all the computers I use now are updated.
Why did you not want to be on the insider ring?
Because I'm working on the book, and the book was being updated for the last version. So now I've switched the book over to RS4, and I'll be updating it for the new version. And that's why I got off the Insider train again, because I need to keep them on this version so everything is correct. The app pick, which also came up today, is Twitter for Windows 10. And this is the little asterisk. You have to be on RS4 to get this. So Twitter for Windows 10 is one of the worst apps ever made in the history of God. But Twitter for Windows 10 RS4... is the PWA version of the Twitter app. So this is something Twitter's been developing out on the web. You can install it to your desktop on Android, your home screen on Android. I have used it in the past through Chrome, where you just pin it to the taskbar. But now it's available in the store. So once you upgrade your Windows 10 computer to RS4 to version 1803, Twitter will be upgraded. You'll have to sign in again, and you'll get that PWA experience, which I happen to like a lot. There is a little bit of a bug going on right now where the Microsoft Store is putting up a please review this app dialogue where you can, you know, select the number of stars and write a little blurb and click submit. And it just keeps popping up, like it pops up repeatedly. And so finally I was like, screw it, I'm going to give this thing a review and just get rid of this thing. And then it still kept coming up. So I said, screw it, I'm going to give this thing a 1-star review and then say, please stop making me do this. But as someone pointed out to me today, It's sort of a beta, right? So RS4 is not publicly available yet. It will be available sometime in the next few weeks. So presumably they will fix that by then. I had a couple of guys on Twitter complain that this is the thing we talked about, that this is a bad introduction to PWAs, to which I would reply, nobody knows this is a PWA. And this problem has nothing to do with PWAs. This problem has to do with the App Store or something that Twitter did with regards to the App Store. Because the process that comes up is not the PWA. It actually has a Microsoft Store logo on the window before it draws. It's a Microsoft Store stupidity. So anyway, here's your first PWA app for Windows 10. It's the Twitter app, which is the thing I've been using for a long time. It's excellent. So good. It's a really good app.
I'm going to try it right. Well, I have to wait, though, till I get that new one.
You have to get an RS4. But if you have a machine there that's on RS4, you can try it now.
I don't, because I did what you're suggesting as your tip a year ago, and I'm happy go lucky.
Well, it's time to do it again.
Time for the Enterprise Pick of the Week with Mary Jo Foley. Oops.
Yeah, I actually just kind of lucked onto this Enterprise Pick this week. There's a Microsoft blog. It's on blogs.msdn.microsoft.com, and it's called Carpe Datum.
Seize the data.
Exactly. So they, specifically Buck Woody, did a post about everything that Microsoft has in the AI space and what to use when. I cannot tell you how much I wish I had found this blog post maybe like 2 years ago, because Microsoft has a lot of different AI things. I mean, everything from like the smarts they're putting into Office to like back-end Azure machine learning services are all part of what they call AI. And what he did is he categorized each piece and told you what goes where and when you would use which of these tools and how you'd use them. He also did some accompanying videos that are also on that same blog. It's a 4-part series. I think it's going to be more about Microsoft's overall AI strategy. I was like, finally, somebody brought some clarity to what Microsoft has in AI. So the best way to do this is go to MSDN blogs, search for Carpe Datum, and you'll come upon Buck Woody's post, and all your questions will be answered in a very succinct way.
Very succinct.
I know. Because
not in Latin.
Not in Latin, in English, and understandable with links. I'm like, wow, this is so handy.
Nice.
So it's like a great overview. If you're confused about what Microsoft has in AI and what to use when, this is your blog post.
And as if that weren't enough, here's another enterprise pick.
So this one is for all of you who have questions about Azure Active Directory. You have questions, Matt Sozman has answers. Man, he has a lot of answers. I've never seen so many links in one blog post. So go to TechNet, look for Matt Sozman's Productive Cloud blog. His last name is S-O-S-E-M-A-N. He has a post that he did today, Azure Active Directory Resources, and it's this giant compilation of everything you could ever want to know about Azure Active Directory and more. All very well organized, handy links. I've had a lot of people thanking me on Twitter because I tweeted this list. They're like, wow, I wish I'd found that before. So everything from proof of concept to how to do password resets, how to do Azure IaaS and Azure Active Directory, you name it. The link is here. So go check that out, Matt Sozman's blog. And if you can't find either of these, I tweeted the links to them both this week. So just go into my Twitter and you'll see the links.
Nice. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we're just lucky Mary Jo's here because she's been celebrating all week long. There's a big, big beer release.
Yes, there is.
Happened Monday.
Is it an update or a release?
I know. Is it an addition or a version?
What are we talking about here?
So every year, Bell's Brewing in Kalamazoo, Michigan, puts out a beer around this time of year. I think it's between spring and the start of spring training for the baseball team there.
That's interesting.
It's called Bell's Oberon, and it's a very delicious orange-colored wheat ale. Nice and light.
It looks pretty.
A lot of people make it their summer beer.
Yeah.
And there's some controversy over whether or not to serve it with a slice of orange in it.
No.
I've had it with and without, and both are good.
Oh,
so
man.
Whichever way you want to go with that, it's up to you. But if you see Oberon on tap or in bottles, it's worth a try.
I'm Bell's guessing Oberon. Paul's not an orange man.
No, I would never do that to a beer, but I've never heard of that beer either. That's interesting.
Yeah, Bell's Oberon. It's a good one.
Yeah.
Yep, it's a nice light wheat.
Oberon, it should be released midsummer, really, but that's okay. We won't.
Yeah.
We won't.
Again, master of time and space.
I know.
I just tested that video again because I the one I was trying to run. Well, no, I mean, it runs fine in Chrome for me. Like, I can watch the video.
You know what I realized? I should probably did it a disservice. I have all sorts of video blockers that seem to be getting in the way of everything now.
Well, I just don't want people to think I didn't do some kind of due diligence.
No, that's probably Leo. I apologize. It didn't run for me.
No, it's okay. I mean, I'm trying to be fair about this.
Yeah.
If, you know, if it was a problem with the blog or whatever, that's fine, but...
No. Yes, thank
still
you
for, doesn't work an edge.
Thank you for fixing that, ladies and gentlemen. Sad to say, the end of the show has arrived, giving Paul plenty of time to get to Logan.
Yeah,
no, I'm going to.
I know,
going to Philly.
I know.
I wish I was going to Logan.
Logan,
I could leave at 5.
really, you that far from Philadelphia?
It's 1 hour and 15 minutes with no traffic.
Oh, wow.
And let me tell you what is around Philadelphia, regardless of what time it is.
Traffic.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know, so.
Yep.
Oh, man.
It's not good.
Wow.
Well, guys, before we sign off, can we talk about Build for 1 second?
Oh, yes.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
The show is over or not over?
Yeah.
Should I end the show and then talk about Build?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, maybe we should do that.
So let's end the show.
Sorry.
We're going to reveal all the secrets of Build. Good night, everybody.
It's secret. No, we're just going to talk about scheduling, but I didn't think you all needed to hear this.
Sorry.
Yeah. We do this show every Wednesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time. That'd be about 1800 UTC. If you want to join us in studio, we have a couple of visitors from Zurich. Yeah, nice to have them. When I stepped out for a moment, I won't tell you when, but I said, please take over because Swiss German is the most beautiful version of German. And but no, they didn't. You guys kept talking, so Elias and Marco didn't have to take over, I'm sorry to say. You just email tickets at twit.tv. We have very comfy chairs we can put out for you, but we do want to keep track of people coming by. So tickets at twit.tv, there's no cost. You can also watch live. We do a live stream at twit.tv/live. And actually, to clarify, because people sometimes say, oh, the stream's terrible, there are at least three different streams there. And if you go to that page, twit.tv/live, you'll see a drop-down that you can choose from Ustream, Twitch, and YouTube. Those are our big three current live streaming sources.
What's the biggest streaming source for you?
It just, you know, a lot has a lot to do with what's on that front page, and sometimes we'll switch it around a little bit. I don't know off the top of my head who listens to which. I think Ustream probably, but more for historic reasons than any other. Although, you know, we just started doing YouTube Live, you know, a few months ago. But I kind of tend to watch YouTube Live. And that solves a problem, by the way, for people who are trying to watch on their Roku. We had a Roku app. Craig Mullaney did a beautiful job of that. But we decided that Roku changed their API, and it was a massive job to rewrite. And since we are on Ustream, Twitch, and YouTube, all three have Roku apps. In fact, you could find one or all three on almost any streaming device you have. So let's say it's YouTube. Just find the Twit channel on YouTube, and you can watch us live right there. So, yeah, they're still live on Roku, but just not through a Twit app, just through one of our providers. You can also listen live. That's another long story that I won't get into. But we, although I should mention, it's at least with some of the streamers, the syntax has changed. I know with Echo, at least my Echo at home, I can't say listen to Twit Live on TuneIn. I'll say Echo, listen to TuneIn Twit Live, and for some reason that works. So we're also working on the group issue. A number of people reported that they can listen to Twit Live on their Echoes, but they can't listen to an Echo group. We think we know what's going on there, and Patrick and Russell are fiddling with the knobs as we speak, and that should start working the next couple of days. If you don't want to go through all this rigmarole, we do have on-demand audio and video, and that you'll find at twit.tv/windows. Download a copy of audio or video, or better yet, subscribe. We have, we're everywhere. Find your, favorite podcast player, Pocket Cast or Overcast or iTunes or Google Play or whatever it is, and subscribe. That way you'll have every episode the minute it comes out on Wednesday. Thanks to Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley. You'll find Mary Jo at allaboutmicrosoft.com, her ZDNet blog. You'll find Paul at Thurrott.com. That's his blog. He also, more than a blog, it's his news site, because he's got other people there too, not just Paul. And then, of course, his books are at leanpub.com. And he's working on the updated field guide to Windows 10, as you heard. That's exciting. Do they get, if they do the online version, your updates go right up immediately, right?
Yep.
Is that right? Yeah.
Yeah. And it's free. So if you bought the book at any time,
you're always up to date. Nice.
RS4 version.
And get those posters too. I really, really like those if they're still available. Yeah. All right, kids, we're done. Thanks for joining us. And I will see you next time right here on Windows Weekly. Bye-bye.